holy month of Ramadan. People turned out in record numbers to voice their solidarity with the people of Gaza and to condemn the Israel's decades-long occupation of Palestinian lands. This year's rallies hold particular significance amid Israel's ongoing genocidal war in the Gaza Strip, which has killed tens of thousands of Palestinians, mostly of whom are women and children. Iran's message through these rallies was loud and clear: to condemn Israel for the occupation of Palestine and hold the regime responsible for its crimes in the occupied territories. Protests have also been held in other countries across the globe. Earlier, Hamas representative in Iran, Khaled Qaddoumi, joined us for an exclusive interview to discuss the significance of International Quds Day amid Israelis' renewed genocidal war against Palestinians.
International Quds Day is witnessing the solidarity and the unity of the universe against the Israeli atrocities, against the oppression, against the hegemonic access of America and Israel today on the oppressed people of in our region, not in Gaza only, and everywhere. In this year especially, and in the last year after the Tufan al-Aqsa on the 7th of October, Al-Quds Day has its own remarkable impact on the narratives of the masses. When we all gathered in one day, in one moment, irrespective of our own school of thoughts, race, or nationality, under one topic, that we want to stop oppression, we want to stop genocide, and we want the only occupation which has remained after the Second World War, that is Israel, to finish. Legally, we are living under occupation. It's our right to defend ourselves against the Israeli genocide, against the Israeli occupation, with all means. That is a right which has been granted by the international law to the Palestinian and to every nation who is living under the occupation. No one dare to speak with them. But on the other hand, America is there to dare to sponsor and extend all means of bloodshedding of the Palestinian to the Israeli army and to the Israeli government, and nobody is questioning them.
Iran's parliament speaker Mohammad Baghir Ghalibaf addressed a large crowd at Tehran's International Quds Day rally. He says the Al-Aqsa flood operation marked a pivotal moment and a legitimate response to the crimes of the Israeli regime.
The storm of Aqsa, that was a turning point, without a doubt. The storm of Aqsa operation over the past 18 months was a lawful and legitimate action against the crimes and the murderous acts of that took over 77 years by the oppressive regime of the Zionist regime in the U.S. and the U.K.
Ghalibaf strongly condemned Israel's war crimes, including its genocidal campaign and deliberate targeting of civilians, particularly women and children. He called out Western nations for their blatant hypocrisy in supporting Tel Aviv while claiming to champion human rights. Ghalibaf also praised the resilience of the Palestinian resistance and reaffirmed Iran's steadfast commitment to their cause, emphasizing that resistance enduring strength. He noted that even after the ceasefire, it remains fully capable of taking decisive actions. While Iran's Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi joined the International Quds Day rallies held in Tehran to show his support for the Palestinian people. He highlighted the significance of this day and hailed the Iranian nation's commitment to the Palestinian cause. Let's take a listen to what he had to say.
Today is an important landmark day, a glorious day considering the intensity of the people's presence in rallies. I think we have a very understanding people and wise people. They do recognize the situation. It's clear that it's much more crowded, and serious things have happened in the region since last Quds Day. It's expected that given the threats and pressure exerted on the Islamic Republic, people have beginning to feel that their presence is important in such a rally. The biggest power of the Islamic Republic is its power. We are moving ahead with reliance on our people, and this is the manifestation of people's presence in the arena, besides the support for the Quds and the people of Palestine and supporting the Palestinian cause. They have also manifested their presence, their powerful support, and this gives us compassionate and for us to move ahead in international arenas.
The U.S.-Israeli genocidal war on Gaza claims the lives of more Palestinians as the regime warplanes continue with the deadly strikes across the besieged territory. The latest attack took place in Gaza City. At least 14 people, mostly women and children, were killed in the strike that targeted a residential building in Al Zaytun neighborhood. Another air raid on a civilian neighborhood in the city of Rafah left 2 people dead. Israeli jets have also targeted the city of Khan Yunis. The attacks come as a death toll from Israel's renewed aggression has reached 855. The overall toll from the genocide in Gaza has surpassed 50,250, with more than 114,000 others wounded. In Gaza, despite the ongoing devastation, the people's support for the resistance remains unwavering. Palestinians continue to stand firm against Israeli aggression and push back against attempts to divide and weaken their resolve, Ghada Brahim reports.
Amid the devastation and despair, the people of Gaza have faced relentless bombardment, starvation, and displacement. Yet through this enduring crisis, one thing has remained unshaken in their collective spirit, their unwavering commitment to their lawful right of resistance.
After nearly 18 months of genocide, the people of Gaza have taken to the streets in an uprising against occupation, mass killings, and starvation, especially in Beit Lahia. The Israeli regime attempts to manipulate and sow division against the resistance is doomed to fail. Our resistance is inseparable from our existence, an undeniable right we will never relinquish.
Despite this advanced weaponry and relentless attempts to crush Gaza's spirit, the Israeli occupation has failed to break the will of the Palestinian people. Its brutal campaigns targeting civilian areas have only laid bare the true barbarity of the regime.
As Palestinians, our heart and soul are with the resistance. Our people remain aware of Israeli conspiracies. What the occupation failed to achieve through military force, it will not accomplish through deceptive plots.
While Israel's genocide continues, a more subtle and insidious attempt is being made, exploiting people's marches against the genocide in Beit Lahia, who erupted calling for the end of the Israeli war.
As the Israeli brutality intensifies, it is clear that the Gaza Strip will continue to be the battleground, not only for physical survival, but for the ideological and cultural soul of the Palestinian people. Ad Ibrahim, Gaza City.
Well, the Israeli regime has launched new airstrikes on Lebanon in violation of a ceasefire with the Arab country. The latest attacks targeted the Hadath neighborhood in Beirut's southern suburbs. Regime's artillery shelling also hit several towns and villages in southern Lebanon. At least 3 people have been killed and 18 others, including 6 children, injured. The International Quds Day ceremonies, which were scheduled to be held on Friday, have been canceled due to the heavy attacks. While Israel has regularly struck targets in southern Lebanon in recent weeks, this is the first such strikes on Beirut since the ceasefire agreement that halted the war in November. The attacks come after the regime claimed the rocket launches targeted northern occupied territories. Hezbollah resistance movement has denied any involvement, saying that it remains committed to the November 27th ceasefire agreement. Our Beirut correspondent, Mariam Saleh, joined us earlier with more details on the recent Israeli strikes on Lebanon.
A drone targeted that building that was threatened, and it's very important to mention that this is a building that lies in the middle of several schools. There were at least two schools in the vicinity of that building. We had, of course, hundreds of students running, their parents coming to take them, the buses of the school, making sure that they evacuate the children first out of that hospital. We know that there was a strike, and supposedly we heard another loud explosion. This is the first strike in the southern suburbs of Beirut. Of course, the first drone strike in the southern suburbs of Beirut, and we are expecting that there is a heavy strike. Now, we know that at the same time, there are also diplomatic efforts. The Lebanese president, Joseph Aoun, is meeting with the French president in France, and they have a virtual meeting with other presidents as well, the Syrian and the Cypriotic president, and they have also spoken about this Israeli threat, which is the very first, like we said, since the ceasefire. We know that there are also calls and attempts by some countries to stop the Israelis from launching this attack. But this is, of course, not the only attack. You mentioned some strikes in South Lebanon, which have been, of course, redundant. We've seen many strikes throughout the time that we've had the ceasefire, more than 1,500 violations.
The martyrdom anniversary of IRGC Commander Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahidi has brought together community members in his hometown of Isfahan. General Zahidi was assassinated in an Israeli attack on Iran's consulate in the Syrian capital Damascus in 2024. Farzuneh Ashurion has the details.
A poignant ceremony, first martyrdom anniversary of Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahidi here in his hometown Isfahan, where he has been laid to rest. General Zahidi was an IRGC commander who was assassinated during an Israeli attack on Iran's consulate in the Syrian capital Damascus on April 1, 2024. A national hero who dedicated his life to the fight against oppression and the Israeli regime. His family stands as the primary guardians of his legacy.
He dedicated nearly 13 years of service to the IRGC, navigating numerous ups and downs throughout his journey. He fought tirelessly, both day and night. The path of struggle against oppression cannot be obstructed by the loss of a single individual. The aspiration of freedom lovers worldwide is the dismantling of the Zionist regime. Those who value humanity strive to eradicate this cancerous tumor.
I learned the essence of true faith from him. He was a dedicated hard worker on his path, fighting from the very beginning in the axis of resistance. He consistently strived to present his work in the best possible way, and I made every effort to support him. His mission was a righteous fight against the enemies of Islam. My message to the Zionist regime is clear. The martyrdom of one individual will not weaken the resistance. We will witness the eventual annihilation of the enemies of Islam and Israel, leading to the ultimate victory of Islam.
The atmosphere is filled with a sense of pride and remembrance as stories of his bravery are being shared among attendees.
I am very grateful to the general for the sacrifices he made. And I want him to know that we understand that we owe our security to him.
He sacrificed his life in the fight against the enemies of Islam, and we will undoubtedly follow his path for as long as it takes, even to the last drop of our blood.
We honor the martyrs, and our presence here is a testament to our deep respect for them. As Iranian teenagers, we are committed to fighting against the Zionist regime until Palestine is free.
Honoring Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahidi emphasizes his vital role in Iran's security and the fight against oppression. His leadership inspired support for the Palestinian cause and reinforced his commitment to the axis of resistance, marking a lasting legacy in the struggle for justice.
Brigadier General Zahidi's unwavering dedication to Iran's defense and his pivotal role within the IRGC remain a source of inspiration. As Isfahan honors one of its distinguished commanders, the collective remembrance serves as a testament to the lasting impact of his service and sacrifice. Farzana Ashurian, Isfahan.
Israel has expanded its aggression in southern Syria, now directly targeting civilians. The latest attack on the town of Qayaya in Daraa sparked fierce resistance from local residents, resulting in martyrs. The Syrian government has condemned the assault, while international reactions continue to mount.
the Israeli occupation continues to escalate, pushing further into southern Syria and now directly targeting civilians. But the people of Syria did not stand idly by. Residents fiercely resisted the unprecedented Israeli expansion, engaging in clashes with advancing forces and sacrificing martyrs and injuries in defense of their land.
The Israeli occupation attempted to impose its presence by force on farmers in Koya, but the Syrian people naturally reject colonialism and occupation. This led to confrontations in the village, where brave men stood up against the aggression, sacrificing their lives in defense of their land.
The people of Dara and the occupied Golan reaffirm their unwavering connection to Damascus. No amount of Israeli pressure, intimidation, or incentives can change that. Resistance is their natural right, enshrined in international law, and they will continue to fight against the occupation.
The reaction in Dara reflects absolute rejection of the occupation. If Israel's actions go unchallenged, mere condemnations will only pave the way for negotiations that compromise Syrian rights. That's why we support all forms of popular resistance aimed at expelling the occupiers.
For Syrians, history has shown that Israel only understands the language of force. Empty condemnations and international resolutions will not drive the occupation out of Syrian land. The youth of Syria refuse to surrender to an occupier that thrives on destruction and terror, standing instead in solidarity with the resistance in the south.
Neither condemnations nor UN resolutions would force the Zionist entity to withdraw from occupied territories. Liberation can only be achieved through armed resistance. The youth of Syria refuse to submit to this brutal occupation and stand firmly with the heroic resistance in the south.
Despite the delayed condemnation by the ruling Syrian regime, the Israeli occupation continues to escalate its aggression. However, for Syrians, the path forward remains clear: resistance until victory.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
President Trump has signed a sweeping executive action to overhaul U.S. elections that would require documentary proof of citizenship to register to vote in federal elections. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Associated Press has covered the story and tells us more. President Donald Trump on Tuesday, 25th of March, signed a sweeping executive action to overhaul elections in the United States, including requiring documentary proof of citizenship to register to vote in federal elections and demanding that all ballots be received by Election Day. The order says the United States has failed to enforce basic and necessary election protections, and calls on states to work with federal agencies to share voter lists and prosecute election crimes. It threatens to pull federal funding from states where election officials don't comply. The move, which is likely to face swift challenges because states have broad authority to set their own election rules, is consistent with Donald Trump's long history of railing against election processes. He often claims elections are being rigged even before the results are known and has waged battles against certain voting methods since he lost the 2020 election to Democrat Joe Biden and falsely blamed it on widespread election fraud. Donald Trump has focused particularly on mail voting, arguing without evidence that it's insecure and invites fraud, even as he has shifted his position on the issue given its popularity with voters, including Republicans. While fraud occurs, it's rare, limited in scope, and gets prosecuted. The executive order's documentary proof of citizenship requirement signals that the president is not waiting for congressional Republicans to pass their long-anticipated Safeguard American Voter Eligibility Act, or SAVE Act, which has aimed to do the same thing. Republicans have defended that measure as necessary to restore public confidence in elections. Voting in federal elections by non-citizens is already illegal and can result in felony charges and deportation. Voting rights groups have expressed concerns that the requirement could disenfranchise the American voters. An estimated 9% of U.S. citizens of voting age, or 21.3 million Americans, do not have proof of citizenship readily available, according to a 2023 report by the Brennan Center for Justice and various other groups. There are also concerns that married women who have changed their names and encounter trouble when trying to register because their birth certificates list their maiden names. Such hiccups happened in recent town elections in New Hampshire, which has a new state law requiring proof of citizenship to register to vote. Donald Trump's order directs federal agencies, including the Department of Homeland Security, the Social Security Administration, and the State Department, to share with election officials federal data that could help them identify non-citizens under voting rolls. It also says the Attorney General should prioritize enforcement of federal election integrity laws in states that don't share information about suspected election crimes with the federal government. The order aims to require votes to be cast and received by Election Day and says federal funding should be conditional on state compliance. Currently, 18 states and Puerto Rico accept mail ballots received after Election Day as long as they're postmarked on or before that date, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures. Continue with the Associated Press's coverage of this story. Donald Trump's order is likely to face legal challenges given that the Constitution gives authority over elections to the states. While Congress has the power to regulate voting and has done so to pass such laws as the Voting Rights Act, the Constitution makes clear that states have primary authority to set the times, places, and manner of elections. Colorado's Democratic Secretary of State, Jenna Griswold, called the order an unlawful weaponization of the federal government and said Donald Trump is trying to make it harder for voters to fight back at the ballot box. Democratic Representative Joe Morrell of New York, the ranking member of the House committee that oversees elections, said the executive order is not just misguided, it is immoral and illegal. At least one Democratic attorney on Tuesday, 25th of March, threatened legal action. Mark Elias, who has been the subject of Donald Trump's ire, said in a social media post, "This will not stand. We will sue." The executive branch does have some authority over elections, according to Justin Levitt, a constitutional law expert and former White House senior policy advisor during the Biden administration. Justin Levitt said, some federal agencies provide election support, including the U.S. Election Assistance Commission, which distributes federal grant money to states and runs a voluntary certification program for voting systems. The U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency helps election officials protect their systems. Former President Joe Biden issued an executive order in 2021 directing federal agencies to take steps to boost voter registration, which drew complaints from Republicans who called it federal overreach. Donald Trump has now rescinded that order. Trump's order calls on Election Assistance Commission to amend voting system guidelines to protect election integrity, including guidance that voting systems should not use a ballot that uses a barcode or QR code in the vote counting process. It said the commission should condition the funding it distributes to states on those new guidelines. Virtually all in-person voters in Georgia, as well as voters in several other states, use voting machines with a large touchscreen to record their votes. The machines then print a paper ballot with a human-readable summary of the voter selections and a QR code, a type of barcode that is read by a scanner to count the votes. It is not entirely clear how the executive order would affect Georgia and the other jurisdictions that use these machines. Representatives for Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger did not immediately respond to messages seeking comment. Raffensperger issued a statement thanking Donald Trump for the executive order, calling it a great first step for election integrity reform nationwide. Representative Brian Steil of Wisconsin, the chairman of the House committee that oversees elections, said the order is a welcome action to secure our elections and prevent foreign influence. National broadcaster CBS News has also covered the same story. President Trump on Tuesday, 25th of March, signed a sweeping executive action to overhaul U.S. elections that would require documentary proof of citizenship to register to vote in federal elections and mandate that all ballots be received by Election Day across the country. The order claims the United States has not adequately enforced federal election requirements that, for example, prohibit states from counting ballots received after Election Day or prohibit non-citizens from registering to vote. The order says the United States has failed to enforce basic and necessary election protections and calls on states to work with federal agencies to share voter lists and prosecute election crimes. The president also threatened to pull federal funding from states where election officials don't comply. David Becker, the chief executive officer of the Center for Election Innovation and Research, characterized the executive order as a federal takeover of the constitutional authority of local and state governments to run elections. David Becker said, "It seeks to seize authority over election technology and processes at the state and local level, all while bypassing congressional approval. If implemented, it could cost state taxpayers tens of billions of dollars," he predicted. Though Becker, who is a CBS News election law contributor, also expects that the executive order will face a difficult road in the courts of law. President Trump has long claimed elections were being rigged in the United States even before the results were known. He's battled certain voting methods since he lost the 2020 election to former President Joe Biden, falsely blaming widespread election fraud for his loss. Donald Trump has already promised that more election actions would be taken in the coming weeks.
Ever since you left, I must confess, the world has become a total mess. You were the bridge that connected hearts, always there for us when we were in distress. Everywhere I look, I see your trace. You tried to make the world a better place. Oppressors will never forget your frown. The oppressed will not forget the smile on your face. Oh, how you shine like a constellation in the sky. Oh, how you shine in the minds of nations that hold you high. Oh, tell me how it feels under the tree of bliss. The trees you planted are missing you, but they've learned to blossom just like you. Though you were martyred mercilessly, an army of you is growing globally. 'Cause people are tired of all this prejudice. They wanna fight like you against injustice. Your name is Qasem Soleimani. You're a hero of humanity.
You defy the limits of intelligence, sending shivers down the spine of global arrogance. You decried oppression in every form, even though it put you in the eye of the storm. You extinguish the flames of terror far and wide. You help countries to reclaim their land was occupied. That's why people will remember you as a hero. Though the powers that be will picture you as a foe. You see, they instigate the terror and manipulate the news, so they can whitewash every crime to make the world confused. They can say what they want, let them curse at the mirror. Truth will always prevail, let them live in error.
You found the key to heaven's gate. Martyred for justice, what a noble fate. Your legacy will linger on forever. Your name we celebrate. Oh, how you shine like a constellation in the sky. Oh, how you shine in the minds of nations that hold you high. Oh, tell me how it feels under the tree of bliss. Oh, how you shine like a constellation.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, being with the Quran during Ramadan. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to A to Z with me, Sister Zainab, and IB English Radio, and obviously topic being the Quran during Ramadan. And obviously this is a particularly beautiful topic, and we are meant to engage with the Quran much more during Ramadan. And I was sort of thinking, you know, one way, a very good way to engage with the Quran that many people, many of us enjoy, is to actually think about some of the stories and lifestyles of the prophets that we read in the Quran. Because obviously I know it's something that I am always thinking about. So any time that hardships come in life, or even when hardships turn to ease, I love to think of some of the stories. So my particular favorite is always the life, the story of Prophet Yusuf. But typically, I think many of us have our sort of favorite stories of the prophets, and maybe we're depending on what's going on, we think about sort of the different aspects of their lives. So And what is so special about the lives of the prophets? So obviously, the prophets always endured extreme hardships. And we know that obviously the final prophet, the seal of the prophet, our holy prophet, Prophet Muhammad, he was the most oppressed. He endured the worst hardships of all. And this is how it is narrated for us. This is what the holy prophet himself would say. Now, from these extreme hardships and from the suffering and torture of the prophets, we can also derive some important points. So we know that the prophets, despite their very high spiritual, intellectual, emotional, even physical status, they were humbled before Allah. But yeah, I'll explain this a bit more. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IB English Radio. And so I'm talking about, in particular, becoming close to the Quran during Ramadan. And I'm suggesting to sort of become closer with the stories of the prophets in the Quran, because there are many things we can ponder and reflect upon in their lives. And obviously, I've just been saying that for many of us, we actually derive, let's say, it helps our patience. We derive strength and sort of extra insights when we think about the lives of the prophets in the Quran. So we know that obviously the prophets, despite their high status, are humble before Allah. And look, there's another point, because we see that obviously the prophets are so close to Allah. There is no flaw, there is no deficiency in their worship of Allah. We consider they are infallible. They are not capable. They do not make mistakes. They don't have they do not do wrong things, evil things. And we see that even though their worship is so perfect, just because they worship Allah, they don't always get exactly what they want. Obviously, Prophet Yusuf and his father were separated for decades, and his father, being such an exalted prophet, the grief was so great. And this is even though he knew his son was alive, and he turned blind with the grief. So obviously the prophets are put through great hardship. And we also have to remind ourselves that, you know, it's not compulsory. Allah does not have to give us particular things. Even if we ask for them, Allah doesn't have to give them to us. And it also helps us to remember, whether we remember this also during the month of Ramadan, just because people are afflicted with hardships doesn't mean that they've done anything wrong. Because, you know, I've overheard these things sometimes. Someone maybe has a family member who's suffering from a great illness, really suffering a particular type of cancer. And in some people's minds, there's the idea, oh, they deserve it somehow. No, this is not. We are all given hardships. Everything is decreed by Allah to the extent that we can bear it. We all have different capacities, and every single hardship is tailored to us. So, inshallah, this is a different way of thinking about some of the ways we can sort of get more familiar with the Quran during Ramadan. And I look forward to welcoming you back to another episode of A to Z here on IB English Radio. And farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
log on to our website at iranradio.ir. Log on to our website at iranradio.ir.
Ramadan, month of God's banquet. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. The blessed month of Ramadan is like a rainfall on a dry desert. It is an exceptional opportunity to saturate the parched desert of our soul with this enlivening rainfall. Ramadan is the time to get rid of the hustle and bustle of everyday life and join the infinite mercy of God. Let us first listen to Ayah 185 of Surah Baqarah. The month of Ramadan is the one in which the Quran was sent down as guidance to mankind, with manifest proofs of guidance and the criterion. Ramadan has provided the best chance for getting close to God and benefiting from His mercy. It is the month of prayer, supplication, and getting close to the Quran. Stay with us for the 27th episode of this series. The Prophet of Islam, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, says, "The reward of good deeds in the blessed month of Ramadan is manifold, and the charities you pay in this month will be accepted more rapidly in the divine court." This means that if we take only one step in this month, it will draw us several steps closer to God. Allah says in Ayah 61 of Surah Mu'minun, that the faithful are those who hasten in good deeds, and they outrace in this. Outracing and hastening is the sign of wakefulness of the heart. It shows the belief that is deeply rooted in the soul. A true faithful is the one who does not hesitate in doing good actions, as he knows that opportunities pass very quickly. The opening ayahs of Surah Al-Waqi'ah categorizes people in three groups. The first group is called As-Sabiqun. They are the people who outpace others in faith and righteous deeds. They will end in paradise of Rizwan, God's satisfaction, whose blessings are beyond our imagination. The second group is called Ashabul Yamin. This is the group of pious and righteous people whose record of past deeds is given to their right hand and will be living in eternal bliss. But the third group, Ashabul Shamal, is composed of those people who received their record of past deeds with their left hand, and they will be cast in hell. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, was asked as who are called As-Sabiqun. He answered, they are the ones who are pioneer in accepting the truth, are open-handed in giving, and wish for others whatever they wish for themselves. The Holy Quran persuades the faithful in Ayah 148 of Surah Baqarah, outpace in good deeds. If we want to attain this degree, we should make haste in good deeds. The prayer for the 27th day of the blessed month of Ramadan reads, O Allah, bestow upon me on this day the grace of the night of Qadr, and change my affairs on this day from difficult to easy, and accept my apologies, and cleanse me of my sins and burdens, O compassionate with his righteous servants. In the beginning of this prayer, we ask God to bestow upon us the grace of the night of Qadr, as if we appeal to God to compensate for our shortcoming and laziness on the night of Qadr. Then we ask God to make easy whatever is hard for us. Part of Ayah 185 of Surah Baqarah reads, Allah desires ease for you, and he does not desire hardship for you. This divine promise gives us hope and calms our heart in tough moments. In continuation of the prayer, we ask God to accept our apologies and cause our sins and burdens to fall. Indeed, according to many narrations from the Prophet and his Ahlul Bayt, sins are like burdens which hinder our way to perfection and prevent us from moving in the path of sublimity and proximity of God. In the end of today's prayer, we call God as Ra'uf, meaning compassionate and the one who is merciful, but his mercy does not include violence. In other words, the word Rahim also means merciful. But this mercy may include violence, as what a surgeon does to his patients. He is surely merciful, but he has to be violent when he is doing surgery. Yet Ra'uf means the one who has mercy without violence. Well, dear listeners, that marks the end of this episode. But as usual, we end the program with this prayer. O Allah, indeed I ask you the best of what you are asked, so give me the best of what you give.
have just listened to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir, and now you can listen to Arabi English Radio by your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day,
on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear listeners, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, and welcome to this episode of the Hadith of the Day. So today we dive into a profound teaching from the Mi'raj, where Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alayhi asked Allah about the inheritance of fasting, you know, the impacts of fasting. If you don't know what Mi'raj is that's the, like, the ascension, the holy ascension of the Holy Prophet to the heavens. So this beautiful narration reveals how fasting leads to wisdom, knowledge, and certainty, yaqeen, transforming our spiritual journey. Let's reflect on the deeper meanings of this, these teachings. So in the famous hadith of Mi'raj, Prophet Muhammad asked Allah, what is the inheritance of fasting? Or, you know, why is it called inheritance? Because, you know, we fast, but the effects of fasting would remain in us, inshallah. It would be good effects, and we would be a better person after, you know, at the end of the month of Ramadan, or every day, as every day goes on in the month of Ramadan. So Allah replied, fasting inherits wisdom, and wisdom leads to knowledge, and knowledge leads to certainty or yaqeen. This is a powerful concept. Fasting is not only about abstaining from food and drink, but is also it also serves as a vehicle for spiritual growth, as a means for spiritual growth. Through fasting, we inherit wisdom. This wisdom allows us to see beyond worldly desires, guiding us to make decisions based on higher knowledge and understanding. It's a reminder that our spiritual fasting can lead to a deeper connection with Allah. So as we continue, the narration highlights a beautiful progression. Wisdom leads to knowledge, and knowledge leads to certainty. When we gain true knowledge, not just intellectual understanding, but deep, heartfelt knowledge of Allah's signs, our certainty grows. This certainty transforms our perspective on life, making us less affected by the ups and downs of this world. Whether we experience ease or hardship, our hearts are at peace, for our certainty in Allah's plan becomes unshakable. So, you know, the narration concludes with this powerful insight. When the servant reaches certainty, they are no longer concerned with how their night and day pass, whether in hardship or ease. This is the ultimate reward of fasting, a heart filled with certainty. Once we reach this level of understanding, our spiritual state is no longer dependent on our external circumstances. Whether we are in times of ease or difficulty, our faith remains steadfast, our hearts are content, and knowing, you know, that everything is in Allah's hands. So I hope that our fast would inherit us wisdom and certainty. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allah.